Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to episode 27 of the Runner's World podcast, the weekly podcast bringing you all the latest running news, reviews and interviews. I'm Ben Hobson, the digital editor, and I'm here with Andy Dixon, the editor-in-chief. Andy, what have we got coming up on this week's episode?
This week we're talking recovery, the great leveller in running, and the often neglected side of training that we should be paying more attention to. Joining to discuss the art of resting is sprinter and personal trainer Riskat Fobodmi Alade.
Now, you're a few good days into a run streak, Mr. Dixon.
I am 32 days into a run streak.
So how's that been on the recovery front?
It's been good and bad. It teaches you to listen to your body more, because if you're running every day, you'll be running on days when you feel tired. So it's kind of like, today I'll do a mile rather than five. So it's taught me to be more in tune to my body, but at the same time, it's forced me to run on days when I probably wouldn't have done ordinarily. So on those occasions, your body's saying, don't run today. And you say, well, I'm just going to ignore you, body. I'm going to run today. But, you know, running 1 mile at a very slow pace, like 9 or 10 minute miling for me, would be fine, I think. But there's been days where in the first few meters, I've been thinking, my God. Particularly after this sprintathon that I did, which involved sprinting and I didn't warm up or warm down, so that caused a bit of recovery problems. But it's been fine, and it's also it's been good because it's educated me. I've been running for 12 years now, and I think I had a kind of preconceived response about what a run means, and that's like it has to be 3 miles fast, or an easy run has to be 5 miles at least. Well, actually, when time's tight, and it quite often is, just doing a mile or 2 miles, you know, 10, 15 minutes is just as useful.
Yeah.
It's all time on your feet and miles in the bank, so it's been good from that perspective. And the other thing that it's taught me is there's an immense amount of washing to be done. And actually, two of those 32 runs have been done in swimming shorts.
Which in the world of recovery, I heard that swimming shorts are the next big thing.
Absolutely, yeah. You'd be surprised. They worked a treat. I won't say that they were optimal, but they were fine. I expected a bit more chafing.
Yeah,
which
right.
Didn't arrive.
Oh, good. There you go. Yeah. The latest collection from a large corporate brand will now be multi-purpose swimming shorts/running shorts. Yeah. I think to aid you in your recovery now, in your run through, you better get our guest in. So here comes that jingle.
Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast, Riskat.
Thank you for having me. My first time on a podcast.
So. Oh, yeah? Yeah. Great. Good. Well, we're going to be talking about one of the most important aspects, I think, of running, and that is recovery.
Yep, very key.
The broad church of recovery, though.
Yeah.
So, as an athlete, when you're in the middle of a serious block of training, what's the most important part of your recovery?
I would say for me, because I'm at that stage where I'm not quite elite yet, so you have to work as well. For all athletes I know, I'd say number one is actually sleep. Yeah. Just straight away. You notice it if you haven't had a good night's sleep. Regardless, as soon as you wake up, you might even feel the DOMS or the soreness more, or just general fatigue, or just when you try and start warming up for that next session, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, that's totally related. I mean, anyone who sits in an office all day long and then you get to the weekend and you've got to do 11 miles or something like that and you haven't had a good night's sleep, you're knackered.
Oh, you feel it. You feel it straight away.
Yeah, it's not great.
Yeah, from the warm-up, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And are you someone that is able to make use of daytime napping, or is it all focused on overnight sleeping?
My mum literally said to me not long ago, maybe the other week, she goes, but why do you nap every day? And I just said, because I'm tired. It's simple as the way that I kind of like structure life is that I tend to work really early in the morning, but because we have training in the evening, and then I'll try and get all clients and everything done by about lunchtime, because I don't like to go straight from being on my feet, PTing, teaching, straight into training. I feel like I need some time to sit down, to rest and recover, just kind of reset. And in that time, I'll normally hit a nap. Yeah.
Do you think that's the sort of the thing that perhaps people don't treat recovery and rest with that sort of regard, that if you can take 20 minutes of just sitting quietly, that adds to the whole measure of being rested?
Yeah, definitely. I think people think it has to be a large amount of rest or nothing. But I think that even just sitting down for an hour when you get home, or even half an hour, yeah, before you then think, oh, okay, I'm going to lace up and go, whatever your training's going to be, however long the run is, I think just getting off your feet for a second, especially depending even what shoes do you wear. For example, I'm lucky that, yes, I'm on my feet, but I wear trainers to work. Mm. If you work in retail or you're on site or whatever, you might be in really uncomfortable shoes, hard shoes, yeah, with a heel, no heel, super flat, whatever. And I think just giving like your feet, which are, you know, it's what you run with,
yeah,
the chance to settle for a second,
yeah,
really
sure,
helps as well. So even that little thing that you might not think about, that kind of rest and recovery.
I think that the kind of the key pillars of it that we talk about with rest. So we, you know, we talk about the sleep and everyone sort of taking time out, but then diet, training load, and then I guess strength and conditioning are kind of like the other aspects of recovery,
yeah,
that people kind of need to. Do you think one of those is more important? We talked sleep being super important, but do you think that they all tie into each other, or is there sort of one thing that people can alter quite easily to take a huge advantage of?
They all tie into each other, but you can take little bits from each and every one. For example, even just talking about strength, depending on how strong you are will depend on how hard a session hits you, which will then depend on how much recovery you need. So for example, after a meet the next day, I might have a recovery session or tempo session, but that's at my intensity. Whereas I know that if I brought some of my clients with me for that session, that's not a recovery session, that's the session,
yeah, yeah,
kind of thing as well, because I'm a little bit stronger, a little bit fitter, a little bit more conditioned. But then that would even change throughout my season. So maybe that session in October time, and we've just come back into winter, might be slightly different as to how it would be in May when we're kind of about to start competing. So I think that they're all equally important, but it's kind of like that spinning plates analogy.
Yeah.
You don't have to, you know, have everything going at the same time at the, you know, maximum, but if you can just give each little one a tap here and there to keep it going, I think that's the best way to look at it, especially if you're not someone that's elite already, or it's your entire career and you can dedicate every amount of spare time that you have to it. I think it's kind of you pick what can you actually do and manage, and then you pick and choose, rather than kind of beat yourself up about not having everything, you know, under wraps and 10 out of 10.
Yeah,
it's the kind of way that I treat with myself and also with clients as well.
And do you find with your clients that people are kind of generally not that aware of the importance of recovery? Is it something that you have to emphasise again and again to them?
Most definitely. Obviously, the intensity isn't in quite the same, but I feel like a lot of people now are training almost like semi-athletes, you know, in terms of the amount of training sessions per week, whether that's like if you're just a runner or if you're someone that goes to the gym and does HIIT and strength and all these different things. But then the planning of those sessions isn't there. Mm. There's no like mesocycles or anything like that, you know, deloading, heavy week. It's just, you're just training.
Mm.
So even that side of things, it's like, okay, well, when was the last time you did, not a rest day, but like a light a week,
yeah,
did you last have? Is something that I'm seeing a lot, that kind of lack of awareness. And then even things like, I always try and tell my clients as well, like, have you ever had a sports massage? I personally have them fortnightly. and I can tell, I'm really in tune with my body now. So I personally know, I'll go into the massage and say to the guy that I see, a guy called Petrus, at first base, Soho Medical, I'll say to him, oh, no, this part of my body, and he'll have a feeling like, yeah, you know, kind of thing. Things like that. Have you had one? An Epsom salt bath? Stretch? Do you, in fact, in their warm-ups, I always think that we'll say to them that part of the recovery starts before you've even done the session. Mm. How did you warm up? Because how and if you warm up will again impact how your body responds to the load of the session as well. Mm. So even before you've started the recovery process, you've started the recovery process,
yeah, sure.
If that makes sense, before the session.
Yeah,
as well.
Like activating key muscles.
Yeah, exactly. Did you activate
warm?
Well?
Yeah.
Are you ready to go? Are you not? Especially if someone, let's say, already has like a little niggle here or there, like have you done the right things or do you have some prehab stuff that you're supposed to do to not exacerbate things that have, you know, caused you trouble in the past and all those bits and bobs as well. Even pre-session is really important as well.
Yeah, I would. I actually, a couple of weeks ago, I took part in a charity sprintathon, which involved lots of runners doing 100 metres each, and it added up to, like, you passed a baton through and you, it added up to a marathon. Anyway, as part of this, I had to do 200 metre sprints, and you think, well, that's not a lot. Of course, I didn't warm up, didn't warm down, so I went from naught to, like, not 100 miles an hour, like 15 miles an hour. And 3 days after this sprintathon, I could barely walk, and I was pulling myself up the stairs, and it was like, I need to warm up and I need to warm down when I'm doing like faster stuff, not just sprinting, but like interval sessions.
Yeah.
It was a real hard reminder of how important it is, as you say, to warm up properly for whatever session it is you're doing.
Yeah, the intensity of it changes. And that's someone who's already fit and runs and stuff. But we have people that don't really do that much that will just jump into these events for charity, for fun, as you should, but poor warm-up, you're not used to it, and then you're in for a little bit of a shock.
Yeah.
You know, and then it even depends in between the two legs that you did, what was the recovery in between that? I think, so I teach a treadmill-based sprint class every Monday. I had them this morning, and mine is always quite short intervals in comparison to a lot of the other instructors and stuff like that, and I'm a big fan of rest. In between blocks, you might just be hanging around the treadmills for like 3 minutes. But I always tell them that you think this 3 minutes is a lot. When I'm doing really high intensity stuff, I've had 6 minutes recovery, 15, 30.
Yeah.
You know, if we're trying to do a certain type of session, for example, like 250s and stuff, completely flat out, you will not hit anywhere near the same time again without the recovery. So it's even aside from recovery after sessions, it's that talk of in between reps or what you're doing, you know.
And easy,
that side of things.
I think a lot of the stuff about easy recovery runs as well, so within marathon training and longer endurance stuff, is that the recovery run is it's not necessarily your rest day, but it's kind of built into the load that you have these like really sort of like easy days. And I think that people tend to kind of ignore how easy that should be.
Yeah.
Like that's the key component of that. Mm-hmm. It's like you're used to running 7 minute miles, and so you'll be like, oh, 8.5 is easy enough. But it needs to be 10.
Yeah,
and
like really slow down.
Really slow down, yeah.
Really slow down. And then it's a case of some people, I guess, when they first start getting into running, do they even know what they're going through mile-wise? Because if you don't know that, okay, you've got 7 minute miles, then how can you know that the easy would be 10, for example? So it's even just awareness of yourself. And that goes back to kind of like training planning, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And knowing, just knowing what you're doing, having an intention rather than completely winging it, which I think is okay in the beginning, of course, if you're just trying to get into a new habit. But after a while, it's kind of like, I need to know my body, know my schedule, know what's going on and plan accordingly so I can look after myself. Because there's no point being super fit if you're on the brink of hurting yourself or burning out or whatever it might be.
What about nutrition then? Because that's kind of like, you know, you've done your session, you've worked hard, your muscles are hurting. The immediate thing that everyone kind of understands, I would say we've told people enough that protein is important by this point.
Yeah.
How do you advise your clients? Would you, you know, if is it real food? Is it supplements? How do you always sort of gauge what's important?
I'm a big fan of real food, unless personal preference and or lifestyle dictates otherwise. For example, I'm on my feet a lot with clients and stuff. And I'm the kind of person that when I wake up, I'm just not hungry straight away. Mm. But then when the hunger hits, I'm probably like mid bulk of like some clients. I'm not going to be like, by the way, I'm just going to head down to my locker. So then I might have a protein shake on the go as I'm on the gym floor with them. And that suits me very well. And I know it suits other people in other jobs the same. But then if I was at home or I had a gap in between clients, I would have brought in something and just eating it that way. So I say that personal preference, as long as you're getting the protein, doesn't actually matter. Mm. And I also try and say with people that I think we're all aware of proteins now, but I always tell people, don't forget your carbs as well.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people think that carbs are the enemy, but they're really not. Especially if someone has like a running goal.
Yeah.
I always just remind them that, okay, but all the best runners in the world from now, the beginning until the end of time,
yeah,
all have carbs as well.
Yeah.
And then it's a case of, you know, if you want to go deeper into timing of said carbs and whatever else. But I think at a baseline level, I'm literally just like, have it.
Yeah.
For step one on both of those. And some of my guys do use supplements.
Yeah.
As well. Boys try and say, use like an accredited protein powder or a whey or whatever, if that's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Even if you're not an athlete, I tend to push, or a competitive, like elite level, where you'd be getting tested by WADA and such. I always tell people to kind of go with like informed sport choices, because at least you kind of know that, you know, they're good quality and what's in there and stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
like
you don't want to be consuming stuff just because
dodgy,
you should be.
Yeah,
exactly.
Dodgy bits and bobs. Yeah. And then I also say, when it comes to the protein snacks as well, that industry just seems to be booming at the moment. Everything is like extra protein, but it actually literally might be like an extra like 2 grams.
Yeah.
But then it's £2 more expensive.
Yeah.
I would say you don't have to have the expensive snacks unless you want them.
Yeah.
And I always say, as long as you can get a good hit of protein throughout your day with, you know, most of the meals and stuff, then, because people think, oh, I had this meal and didn't have any protein in it, it was a sandwich, and I was like, okay, well, you know, that does have protein in it, it's just not marketed as a protein product.
I mean, but pasta, you know, has protein in it.
Yeah, I say to people, the loaf of bread that you had, that you made that sandwich, has protein in it.
Yeah.
So if you add up every little bit, you know, the bread, the this, the that, the meat, whatever you put in, you probably ended up with quite a nice hit anyway, so don't panic about it.
So is the best approach for protein just to try and have it consistently over the course of a day, rather than, I think many runners might say, right after an interval session or a long run, those kind of hard quality sessions, that they would be having like a protein shake or trying to up their consumption. But do you think it's better to just make sure that you're having a lot of protein throughout the day?
Both are kind of correct. Lots of research has shown that to have like a really good kind of balanced level of protein today is great, so you've got like a constant supply for your muscles. But in the same way, after like particularly difficult sessions, again, research like varies. Some people be like, it has to be half an hour, you know, within that half an hour window. Others a bit more lenient, within 2 hours is fine. So again, I always say, like, as soon as you can manage it, like, don't kill yourself trying to, you know, shove something down your throat if you're not ready, if you're trying to cool down or whatever else. Both do kind of work as well. Yes, immediately after the session, but I wouldn't say that should be your only hit of protein for the day. Try and have some little by little throughout the day. And also, when you're training, often it makes you kind of ravenous. But protein helps with satiety as well. So if you're having that throughout the day, it should help you feel a bit fuller for longer. You know, so you're not prone to just inhaling everything you see. If you're if you are a little bit tired from the session before or stuff like that, and just generally in like a heavy block, but trying to just maintain where you are kind of weight-wise and stuff like that.
The other thing that people kind of will go to is they get kind of stuck in a routine, maybe a foam rolling sort of session immediately afterwards, or kind of the cool down element of stuff. I think that that's another side of recovery that perhaps is neglected and misunderstood, is that, you know, how the muscles respond to treatment the days after as well, and sort of like reloading and stuff like that. How do you go about coping with sort of back-to-back sessions and stuff like that?
I'd say that back-to-back sessions, it's trying to get a decent cool down in and then a good night's sleep, but then going back to that the next day, I have to warm up really well. Like on the way here, I was feeling my hamstrings. I trained on Saturday and threw in some eccentrics that I'd been missing a little bit, just trying to figure it out with the competition season. And I was like, I really hope I don't get like a lot of DOMS from this. And today I was like, no, it's got me. So now, but I've still got training today. So all I know is that my warm up will be really good to cope with the fact that I am feeling a little bit stressed out in my hamstrings.
What's like the time? What's a really good warm up time wise?
For sprints and like that kind of training, I think for most people, we're warming up for like a good 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And for me, that looks like starting off with some resisted stretching and mobilizing with like a pretty thick band. And then I'll go into some, if I'm really sore, I might foam roll a little bit, but I tend to do that kind of after actually, into some lighter drills and then some more technical drills, and then some abilities like leg swings, stuff like that, and then glute activations. And then if I've got any other little bits and bobs, like I've got some little things from my physio that I've been given to do pre-session, do those. Then I'll do a few easy drop-in excels in trainers, build up in intensity. Then I'll do some accelerations in spikes, sort of 20 meters, then maybe 30. And then I'll start my session. So before the main part of the session is, I've already been doing something for like 45, maybe 50 minutes. And it's not rushed. It's like I'll do a little bit of this, sit down for an Excel, do a little bit of that, walk back, talk to my coach, do another Excel, kind of stuff like that.
But that's mad though. Like if we, how do we prepare for a lunchtime run?
We just go.
T-shirt's not even on before you're out the door yet.
But I think this is, I think that there's a vast amount of pre-run warm-up and technique that can be learned from sprint and athletics that perhaps the recreational runner doesn't even consider.
Yeah, 100%. And I think we have to be accepting that, as you said, like lunchtime run, you don't have time to be doing all that, but 5 minutes, 7 minutes will go a long way. Yeah. A couple of leg swings, some hip circles, maybe some glute activations, maybe some dead bugs to activate the core. Stuff like that, maybe a few, you know, skipping drills, whatever it might be, if you're trying to improve your technique as a runner, and then off you go as well. Because 5 minutes is better than nothing.
And that 5 minutes will see your recovery like tenfold.
Because your run will most likely be better. You won't spend the first part kind of waking up your body because you've already done it. So then the run will be better. So then hopefully the recovery process after said run will be better as well.
Do you think that when we're talking about recovery days, so days when you're not running at all, do you think there's also a danger that people just do too much stuff in those days, like say going shopping or doing chores or going to, you know, to drive around there? Even in driving around, you're using your muscles. Is there a difference between complete rest and what we might think of rest, where you're actually still doing stuff? Does that make a difference or not?
Yes, most definitely. Right. Most definitely. Sometimes I'll come back from a session and mom's like, oh, can we do some gardening? No. No. Because I'm shattered and I need to just lie down.
Yeah.
There is rest, and then there is complete rest as well. But again, we have to think about, you know, are you that elite athlete? Is it your entire career? Do you have a job? Are you a family person? Yeah. Do you have children? Do you have something in the diary that you've said that you do with your niece, and like you don't want to be that horrible auntie and you've made the commitment? But it's like, okay, well, if you know that you're in a certain block and you're training for something, for example, as many people are, then you might have to be a bit more rigid with that. Mm. You know, your partner says, oh, can we do, you know, clearing out the yard? Not really, because I am supposed to really take it easy today. I've had a really hard 6 days, or the past 3 week cycle has actually been quite intense, and this has been planned in. Mm. So maybe we can, you know, do a little walk in the park, stuff like that's fine. But you're not going to be helping your best mate move house or something like that, you know, carrying heavy furniture. So yeah, sometimes you do need to kind of put your foot down for yourself and take it easy for sure.
Got to have the understanding family unit though.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing.
Which is understanding family and friends and even boss and colleagues makes a big deal. Like, oh, are you going to come out for the team? What's it? We're going to the, you know, I don't know. The trampoline park for like a team bonding. Oh, no, I can't be doing that.
No.
Can't be doing that. Hard decisions. Yeah, it's hard.
But you've got to do it.
Yeah.
What about you then? What's next?
I'm competing this Sunday in a open meet in Newham, 200 metres, two rounds of the 100 metres, I should say. And then there's another one on the 18th. I'm going to do 100 and a 200. And then I will be off to the British Champs in Birmingham at the end of the month.
Nice. You feeling good?
I'm feeling pretty good. I've had some hip issues this year. First on the right hip, thought it was over. Then on the left hip, got me again. But touch wood, it's been all right lately. So feeling pretty good.
Oh, great.
In some good shape.
Oh, perfect. Well, look, thank you so much for coming on, chatting through recovery. I think that everyone now will go off and have a complete and utter rest. I'm not going back to the office.
Yeah, I'm going for a nap.
Yeah, perfect. All right, great. Reska,
thanks
so much.
Thanks for having me,
guys.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
So Jane has joined us in the studio to go through some news. Jane?
Hello. I think the first bit of news is a bit kind of self-indulgent, but Mr. Rick Pearson... has done 100 miles in 23 hours and 4 minutes. Is
yeah,
that right,
Rick Pearson?
Well done, Rick.
Thanks very much. Yeah, it feels good. I'm slightly sore as a result, but yeah, very satisfying to have completed the distance because, yeah, there are times during those sort of races where you start to wonder if it's ever going to happen.
Did you hallucinate at all?
I was really worried about hallucinating, Andy. I felt like the kind of physical trauma of an event like that you can kind of predict, but I was like, if I start seeing things in the woods I think that might be
I'm done,
that might be the end for me. But no, nothing. I don't know when the hallucinations start to kick in. I'm presuming it's different for different people, but no, nothing to report on that front.
So then, mate, let's give us mile pointers for different sensations. So feeling good all the way through until mile
almost the opposite. So this is what surprised me about this race for me, is that it felt really bad for the first 25.
All right.
And I was quite far back in the field. I had sort of some quite big sort of stomach issues, not to go into too much detail on that. But I was just kind of, I saw Mark Thornbury, who was part of my race crew at Box Hill. And he said, Rick, you've got a plan A and a plan B and you're behind them both at the minute. I was looking for sort of a plan C, but then I started feeling a bit better between 30 and 50. So I got into halfway not feeling bad, actually. And then you pick up a pacer and stuff. There's a picked up best mate, George Bull, who did a brilliant job. So and then I felt really good, actually, but almost for the rest of the race. I mean, it hurt, but like mentally I was kind of on board. So it was it wasn't the kind of trajectory of like the downward slope. It was much more like I started to believe that I was going to do it after about 60 miles, and that felt really good.
Did you get to do any sort of sprint finish?
Well, you do finish on an athletics track.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah. Sprint face.
Yeah, no one was there. It didn't seem to attract a big crowd again, but it was... That probably was the fastest I run, but I mean, I think you're probably looking at about kind of 7-minute kilometre or something, so I wasn't setting any world records there.
Well, mate, look, it was an absolutely phenomenal achievement, especially if you
off
the back of a poor start, shall we say. So, a huge congrats from all of us, and I'm sure all of our listeners will celebrate with us.
Yeah, thanks very much. Much appreciate all support, and it was an amazing thing to do. And I'll be back in the office tomorrow, so I look forward to boring you all with all the details.
All right, well, go away now and we'll talk to some other people.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, cheers, mate.
Thanks. Cheers, mate. Thanks.
Bye.
Well, that was nice to talk to Rick.
Well done, Rick.
Well done, Rick. Right. Never again, he said.
He'll be doing one in about 3 months.
Give him a week.
Right, Jay, more news?
More news. Diane, this is my favourite story of the week. Diane Hoffman is 91. She ran her first ever track event at 90, and she's broken the world record in the 90 to 94 age group for the 400 metre, finishing in 2 minutes 44.
Well done.
Insane. And she said she blames competitive tennis for her speed.
Wow.
But if I, starting running at 90 and breaking a world record at 91.
I tell you what, seriously, these later life athletes that we spoke about, I'm going to forget his name, but we spoke about a gentleman the other week who was racking up the world records.
Yeah, it's very inspiring. It's good to know that there's still, you know, there's still achievements to be had.
Yeah.
Especially for someone like me in middle age, it's like, great, I'll think about 400 metre running maybe.
They're setting the bar quite high.
Yeah, they are. They are. That's fair to say.
And more women running news. Sharon Gaither, 55-year-old ultra runner, has become the fastest woman to travel by foot from John O'Groats to Land's End. And she finished in 12 days, 11 hours, 6 minutes and 7 seconds, which is, I think it broke the last record by like 4 hours or something. So like she did it well. Mm. And she said she felt 105, but was relieved. And she's back in work today.
Well, there you go, Rick.
Yeah, Rick. Why have you got a day off?
It was 822 miles. Oh. It's a real shade on Rick Pearson.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's an amazing... Like, that sounds like the sort of amount of time people would ride that, like, yeah, on a bicycle.
Yeah, yeah, I like the way that you made it clear that it was to travel by foot, yeah, rather than just to travel from John O'Groats to Land's End. That was in case people thought that she was doing it on a bike or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, because that's the sort of time that you would imagine, yeah, easily, yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Oh, well, there we go. Ultra running scene, more incredible performances from the women. It's good to know. Thanks, Jane.
No worries.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
We're going to continue with the recovery chat because in the office for the last week or so, we've been talking on recovery, but mainly because Nike have brought out this new shoe, the Joyride, which is a shoe designed specifically to aid runners recover on their easy runs. So there's a whole remit of recovery stuff out there for runners. You can spend your life's earnings on recovery products, sliders, compression. I kind of feel like this is probably the first shoe designed for task in that area, running shoe. Yes. And we've had a bit of some time in them. Are they necessary?
Well, that depends on... Yes, I think so. If you accept that there are shoes for fast intervals, yeah, and like performance flats designed for fast running, I think there's nothing to say that you couldn't have a shoe or can't have a shoe at the other end of the spectrum, which is designed for easy and slower running. Yeah. Now, the question is, you could ask yourself as a runner, it's like, well, do I need that performance flat? If you're not running 5Ks very often, then probably not. Equally, a bespoke recovery shoe. If you're just running two or three times a week, you probably can get by without it.
Yeah.
If you're heavy into a marathon training block and training 6 days out of seven, I definitely think there's a place for it in your cupboard, as it were.
As the person Jane currently training for a marathon,
kind of
Berlin on horizon.
Yes.
How have you found it? Is an additional weapon in the arsenal?
I mean, when you first, I think that's the thing, they've got all these beads in them, which I think Nike have done a lot of research about without sounding like I'm reading a press release, I promise I'm not. And when you put them on, you can kind of definitely feel, it feels weird, doesn't it? It feels like you've got something under your foot that shouldn't be there. And I was a bit like, these are just a gimmick, they look cool, but, you know, they on first feel, you're like, no. But they do kind of mould around your feet and they are comfy. Mm. And I mean, I think they do try and help you slow down a bit because the way the beads are positioned under the ball of your foot and stuff, they kind of, it's more of a rocking motion. It's not like a, you know, you couldn't go fast in these. But I don't know, I kind of get very attached to certain shoes and I don't know if I could have... I do this and this shoe and this and this shoe and this and this. But then, you know, I guess there are runners that do that.
But then from the other side, because you're a Hoka fan.
Yes.
So you're used to a maximal, highly cushioned shoe.
So I do my long runs in the Hoka Bondi, as cushioned as you can go.
So in terms of...
These feel flatter than that.
So for you, they're just like...
So for me, but then they're meant to be similar to the Hoka and I haven't done a lot of miles in them. So I think maybe, you know... Maybe need to give them a bit longer.
Yeah.
But I think it's really interesting that Nike spent, you know, apparently these have been 10 years in the making. And they've spent so long getting runners faster. This kind of seems a bit like, oh, where did that come from?
Yeah.
But I think obviously, you know.
Well, you got to run slow to run fast.
For sure. And I think one of the, quite apart from the effect that this shoe has on your feet, which is one thing, and Jen's right, you do feel a kind of, particularly under the ball of my foot, I can feel, when you put it on and walk in it, you can feel a kind of, it's not uncomfortable, you can just feel a kind of bulge there.
Yeah.
It's odd. You don't really feel it when you're running in them, but they're quite soft, so it'd be quite hard to get on your toes and overdo it in them. But I think it's also, it would change your mentality, I think, because if you have a pair of recovery shoes in your cupboard, I think you're more likely to respect recovery.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest crime that most runners have is they go too fast on recovery in easy days. They just think, I'm feeling all right today, so I'll just run at my normal pace, when actually that's where they're missing the benefits of slowing down a bit.
Yeah. Technology, you know, hopefully providing everyone with a little bit more of a performance benefit.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. I'd like to say huge thanks to our guest Riskat and to Number 8 Studios in Soho, where this was recorded.
For more news, reviews, interviews and much, much more from the wider world of running, please head over to runnersworld.com/UK. Please like and subscribe on iTunes. Thanks to Acast, our hosting partner, and we will see you next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.